From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast, is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Aftershock bonus episode, where we get to go behind the scenes of season two of this incredible podcast from iHeartRadio with some of the cast and creators of Aftershock. My name's Noel Brown. I am the show's executive producer for iHeartRadio, as well as a fan. And I was lucky enough to be joined by Janelle Parrish, Tati Gabrielle, Kelly Hu, and Sarah Wayne Callies. Janelle plays Lei in the show. Tati, of course, plays Michaela. Kelly plays Huanani, a.k.a. Auntie. And Sarah plays Cassie Wallace, in addition to being the creator of the show. So without further ado, let's get right into this roundtable discussion on Aftershock Season 2. So, Sarah, season two drops us right into the water, literally. Can you start us off by just giving us a little bit of a recap, like previously on Lost, previously on Aftershock? Where are we picking up in season two from season one?
We're picking up season two maybe 30 seconds before season one ends. So season one ends, we see Cassie paddle off. We don't really know what happens to her. We stay with Wayne and Dover, and then we end with Michaela and Lei. And you don't really know where Cassie is in the whole giant, explosive, chaotic mess of it all. So season two, we pick up with here's where Cassie was moments before everything, quite literally blew sky high. And we follow her kind of on her journey to try and find Michaela and Lei.
So with the second chapter now, can you talk a little bit about what you learned from season one and how you're carrying those experiences from the earthquake to the island?
I think probably the biggest thing I learned from season one is that it's a really dumb idea to try and do it all by yourself.
Accurate.
It was just so much more work than I think any of us anticipated. I mean, you know, my producing partner, Ben, was like, oh, I'm going to drown in logistics and edits and trying to get people in the same room at the same time. And so, you know, one of the first things that I wanted to do when the second season came up was I wanted help. I needed more thoughts and more voices in the writing and the creating of things. And so I reached out to Tati and I was like, hey, would you help me break this season? And can we talk about these characters and where they should go? And you know, we'll start with my bad ideas and then you can help me clean them up.
There are no bad ideas.
There are no bad ideas.
There are some bad ideas.
Well, Tati, what was that like for you going from, you know, acting and being, you know, cast for season one to then getting the opportunity to help guide the direction of season two? That must have been a really cool opportunity.
Yeah, like it was. I mean, first off, I was so honored, that Sarah would ask that of me and that she considered my ideas to be good ones. And it was really awesome too from a perspective, because for me, I've always wanted to, you know, produce and make things. And so I feel like Sarah is such a good mentor and guide for that. And so just to sit and like riff things, I mean, she came with, you know, really solid key things to start from, like the idea of land rights, land rights, civil rights, and this, I forget the word that you used for it, Sarah. But this idea of, how do I put that back into words? Of, I guess, the meaning for living and why people choose to like sort of go on. Mm. And so just starting to like riff and I don't know, like find things, think about each character individually and what the like real circumstances of everything would be, like away from like when it came to Cassie and how she's dealing with not only the death of Lawrence and revisiting that, but how is she carrying a whole, you know, carrying this child that is Michaela and trying to make a better life for her. And then as well as the guilt of what one would experience in taking a life, trying to just like be as grounded grounded and forthright with these characters as possible.
You had a lot of great questions too. You know, like we would stumble into something and you had a lot of like, well, what if we think about it from this perspective? But the other thing that I think you did that I was so grateful for, I think a part of a slightly bigger thing generationally, is you just had more guts. I'd be like, I'm afraid to do this. You're like, okay, don't be. I was like, yeah, but I've been in this business for so long with people screaming in my, you know, like, nobody cares about Hawaii. Nobody cares about... blah, 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 blah. And you were like, right, or just write the show that feels honest, that we're stumbling towards.
Isn't that part of the beauty of podcasting too, that you don't have as many people screaming at you and that you can really tell your story and do it the way you want to do it without having to, you know, kowtow to executives? I mean, I'm your executive on this and I don't think I gave a single note, and I'll tell you why that is. I certainly do when there's issues, but there's no issues. You guys are creative partners that I trust implicitly, and aside from just making sure that you have everything you need, I don't need to interfere. And I think that's generally kind of the way podcasting works for the most part. So that must have been liberating for you from season one to season two, and just coming from legacy television production, it must be a real breath of fresh air.
Well, you know, I mean, I think we've probably all had the experience of being on shows, getting a script going, I wonder what the thought was behind this choice for this character I've now been playing for 30 episodes. And I kind of wonder why nobody asked. Mm-hmm. And so, like, you know, Janelle and I got on the phone, you know, once Tati and I had kind of broken stuff. And I was like, how does this land with you? Does this feel right? Does this feel like the place that you would be coming from? And there were a couple of questions that came out of that I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. We got to loop that kind of thing in. And it feels like, done right, this can be a team sport.
Truly.
Not and just.
I remember when you called me, I was like, this is amazing. Nobody ever asks really what the actor wants and what the actor would do with their character. And so to have that amazing collaborative conversation with you, I was like, this is a dream. I wish every director would ask that, because it also, like you said, brought questions up for me where I was like, how do I feel about that? As opposed to just getting the script and then being like, well, I'll put my spin on it. When you were like, how would you feel if Leigh said this or Leigh did that? Does what feels organic to you? It made me really think too, which was really great and really unique.
That almost feels more like the way films were made in the 70s, where there was a lot more kind of method kind of conversations around motivation and stuff like that. It's almost become a cliche where it's like, what's my motivation? But in podcasting, because you can be so nimble and work so quickly, you have time to have those kinds of conversations. And I think that yields a rewarding experience for the actors and for the listeners, because these things have been discussed and you don't have just some guy writing a script about a person or a culture or whatever that he has no idea about. You're actually contributing, the people that are involved, I think is really, really important. So Aftershock, along with a lot of fiction podcasts, regular podcasts, as a podcast producer and host, I had to convert dozens of podcasts to remote home recording during COVID lockdown. I distinctly remember last season talking about one member of the cast literally having to record in the trunk of their car because they didn't have studio space, and they like covered themselves in blankets. First of all, what a hero, like to go through commitment. All that. What if they had gotten locked in the trunk? I mean, and no one was around.
He had to. He had to text his wife and be like, "You got to let me out of the trunk."
You're scooping my whole question.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
No. You're creating an even more interesting story from this question. But the real question is, though, obviously that was difficult at best. But now with season two, we didn't have to do any of that stuff. Things are largely normal-ish. How did everyone that was on season one, that is now on season two, feel about the way things went? And was it liberating to not have to do that? Was there something weirdly, creatively intriguing about having all of those like roadblocks? Sometimes, you know, limitations are interesting. I'm just curious about all of you, all three of you who are on season one, what working on season two without those problems was like.
Well,
I would say let's start. We've heard from Sarah and we've heard from Tati. Let's start with Janelle.
It was definitely interesting recording season one from my closet. and it was my first scripted podcast as well. So it was like truly a learning experience, but you're doing it, you know, inside of your clothes, trying to muffle the sounds. but it added to the experience and how different and fun and strange it is to do something like that. But season two was so much fun to be able to actually be physically in the room with some of the actors. Mm. And also just like, you know, you listen to season one and I'm doing scenes with people that I haven't even met in person. And so I remember when Tati came in, I was like, hi, oh my gosh, I get to see you in person and actually look at your face while we say our lines together. And that was so special. And it just kind of like switches up the energy a little bit when you have another actor in the room with you, you know, physically doing scenes with you. So it really was kind of cool just having two totally different experiences from season one and season two.
I'm always blown away when I hear about the way like animation voiceover is done, where like no one ever meets each other and they're just doing their bits, and somehow the end product you see, you'd never know that. And that's all credit to amazing editors and sound designers and all of that good stuff.
And directors, directors,
of course,
because when you don't hear the other person and then the director has to tell you how the scene, you know, what the tone of the scene is and how the other character read their lines. So yeah, you rely a lot on your director.
I bet often they'll do a line reading counter to you to help you kind of react, you know, and that's, it's mind blowing to me. So it's almost like this is real acting. You're in the room together, you're responding. It's like playing a scene rather than just doing like a video game or something. Mm-hmm. So that makes a lot of sense. How about we hear from you now, Tati? What was your experience like doing season two in the ways that it was different from doing season one, like presumably in your closet or a car, trunk or whatever it might have been?
Yeah. It was like, I mean, like Janelle said, it definitely made it first season like very fun and interesting to have to do things like from a closet and sort of work it out. I think I remember even the last episode, I was in a different house and I was crunched in the bottom of a closet trying to record, which was fun. but this season, I had like, I got to do like, I guess like half and half, because I did half the season recording from home because I was in London, which was still tricky to work out, but it made it such like a relief and a joy once I did get in the room with like Janelle and what, like being like she said, like just, it makes it feel more real and more in the moment. And you, I feel like you can connect better than through a screen and there's not, you know, freezing and starts and stops.
Wait, you go. It's happening right now. Right. It's happening. Yeah.
Like, and like, I mean, to Sarah's credit as well, like it, even in the times when we weren't able to, like, you know, with scheduling and things, get to be even on FaceTime or Zooming with the people that we had to be in scenes with, like just having Sarah as a reader for certain, like, oh man, having an actor as a director is the best thing in the freaking world. Oh my gosh. Because like not only, yeah, like not only do they understand everything that you're going through, like, and are able to speak to you from that place and not like this, like godlike space away that has no idea what it is that's happening in the mind to try to get there, but to like to have so, like in the voiceover space, to have somebody read with you that's actually reading with emotion and actually giving you what the context is in real time, and not, you're not having to like, I don't know, sift through a description of what's happening, just made it all the better.
The creator of the world, the creator of the characters.
Exactly.
I mean, that's obviously the best possible situation. Sarah, what was that like for you? Obviously, there, you know, anytime you're doing podcasts, there's going to be a hybrid kind of approach where sometimes you're in person, sometimes you're remote. That's a good thing. It's nice to be able to have that flexibility. But how is it different for you being able to direct and give those line readings and be able to enjoy watching people play off each other in person versus, you know, season one? I mean, and season one is amazing. You'd never know. Anybody listening to it would never know that's how it was made, to all of your credit and your editor and sound designer. But how was having done that, been through that experience, how did it make season two all the more like freeing and exciting?
Well, you know, I mean, what was funny is after shooting recording most of season one during the pandemic, we were like, oh, season two, yay, no pandemic. Except that everybody hauled off and got like 20% more famous. So all of a sudden I'm like, where's Tati? Oh, she's on a runway in Paris. Like, where's Dave? He's on a billboard. Where's Janelle? She's in a musical. Like, I was like, wait, my cast is now too busy. I'm so happy that they're all like, I remember trying to find Russell at one point and someone was like, he was nominated for an award this morning. I was like, I'll call him tomorrow. It's everybody was like, and by the way, trying to get Kelly in a studio is like a game of where in the world is Carmen Sandiego. She's like, I'm on a yacht. I'm on Burning Man. I'm in a, like, it was just, it's amazing. I was just like, I don't even know. And so what was so beautiful is just like, man, everybody's killing it. But the scheduling still required a lot of like, okay, so I'm going to do my best Jeffrey Dean Morgan. Sorry, guys. Like, I, you know,
can't
this
wait.
Is...
So
are you going to do an impression? Are we? I'm ready. Let's go.
I don't have a pack of cigarettes and a Diet Coke with me at the moment. So I can't quite. But no, I mean, it really was. It's this constant sense of just overwhelming gratitude, because nobody is doing this because it's going to like win them an Oscar. Do you know what I mean? Like,
you could win a potty. You could win a Webby. That's possible.
I know, but nobody's agents are like, you guys, you got to do this. This is going to change your career. It's just
about
everybody's
the story.
Doing it for love and for kindness. And I didn't actually, of all the people that I knew before this show, you three, Tati and Janelle and Kelly, are the three that I didn't know. And I'm like dying to all have dinner. Like, I'm so deeply grateful for this incredible cadre of brilliant women. We tried
in
LA.
In different places.
Yeah. And now I'm moving to Vegas.
Kelly's in Vegas.
Come to Vegas. Come, let's do it at my house. Bring an air mattress.
I love it.
It is fascinating, though, because even with as nimble as podcast production is, with people that are busy, it's still about wrangling schedules and stuff. Mm-hmm. But you do have to appreciate that it's definitely different than getting someone on a call sheet, showing up, you know, at a place in wherever. You know, you can make these things happen between projects. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about, you know, fiction podcasts is you can do it and you're doing it out of love, but also you can do it between stuff. It's possible to do that.
Mm-hmm. And you can do it during stuff. I mean, people would come in on like days off and stuff. And like you said earlier, you know, you can take swings that like, I don't know that there's a studio. And now this is pre-Maui when all of a sudden, like for a minute, the Hawaiian Islands and, you know, issues of land and water really had everybody's attention. But I don't know that there's anybody that would have let us do what we did with Janelle's character and with Kelly's character and with Branscombe's character. And, you know, like that. That is something that we got to do because this is a somewhat incubational, experimental space.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned something that just kind of got my brain going. The idea of, oh, there's this horrible tragedy in the news. Now this thing is hot. Let's do a thing about that. It's an awful perspective, but it exists in executives, and it's a thing that we all probably run into. You all have been doing this podcast. Several of you have connections to Hawaii. Janelle, Kelly, and Sarah are all from Hawaii, and Hawaii plays a large part in this season. Of course, offering my deepest respects to you and your family and friends with the Lahaina tragedy, but Native Hawaii so often does get overlooked in entertainment. And again, I started this question because of the whole idea of an executive saying, well, we got to do a thing now. Let's fast track this because of this horrible thing in the news. That is obviously not any of y'all's perspective. This is about telling its story because of your love for the place. But let's start with this. How do you feel about that kind of pressure to do a thing that maybe would have been overlooked previously, but now all of a sudden something bad has happened and there are people out there in Hollywood and wherever who want to capitalize on that? Sarah, I'd love to hear from you first.
It's such an interesting question. I mean, the thing about Hawaii, I think, is really complicated because it occupies a place in the American imagination that I think is very singular. Most people in the mainland have been raised to believe that Hawaii exists to entertain them, a little bit like Disneyland, you know? And I don't know, Janelle and Kelly, I'd be curious to hear what you think about this, but the number of people that I know in my life with all the love in the world are just like, you don't understand, Hawaii is so special to me. It means so much to me. And I completely agree. But sometimes the flip side of that comes with and I'm entitled to spend my vacations at the Four Seasons on Lanai and never engage with the stories of the land or maybe never even meet a Kanaka Maoli person.
Or even buy land, you know, out there, giant, you know, pieces of land, and not actually engage with Hawaiians or understand the culture, just kind of blocking off your own little plot of land and building a wall and, you know, living as a foreigner, as a haole on Hawaiian land without, you know, really understanding what Hawaii is made of, you know, because it's so much more than hula girls and, you know, Mai Tais. I don't think Mai Tais is even from Hawaii. But
I mean, there's no tea in the Hawaiian language, so.
Right. It's the Hawaii has such a deep, rich culture and history. I was just watching this thing on Instagram today about how, you know, this guy was talking about how his mom, you know, they were chanting away the ghosts that were coming, you know, like from the mountains all the way down into this one hole inside, you know, that went into the hole into the land. And then they put this big boulder to lock all the spirits inside. And, you know, it's like, that's the stuff that Hawaii is made out of, you know, it's not just the tourist stuff that you see and, you know, the pretty beaches and whatnot. It's, the culture is so deep and people don't even try to scratch the surface of of figuring out what Hawaii is really about.
Hear, hear. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I really loved, Sarah, about specifically this season as well. Like, you really tap into what it's like to be Hanai family, right? Like, we talk about my character and how I say, like, but am I, is it my place to even talk about our culture if I don't have native blood? And I love that you talked to me about that, because I'm from Hawaii, but I don't have native blood, but I very much feel like it's part of my culture because I grew up there. And I know the culture, and I know the aloha spirit that comes from a place like that, and how proud we all are to be from this wonderful place and how that connects us, right? And you talk about all these things that are so real and so relatable to someone like me too, where it's like, oh, can I talk about that? Like, is that okay for me to say that I'm from Hawaii, mm-hmm. but I don't have Hawaiian blood? Like, will people not accept me then as somebody who, you know, is from the land? And you brought up all of these things that kind of felt scary to talk about, but felt so liberating to also talk about, and is so real. And like Kelly said, like, I think a lot of people, when they think of Hawaii, they think like, oh, like you said too, Sarah, like, oh, it's so special to me. It's just like so beautiful, and I had a great vacation there. But there's so much more to Hawaii. It's that aloha spirit. It's that family. It's that culture. And you really got to help us explain that and explore that in this season, Sarah. And that was one of my favorite things about this season, personally.
Well, you know, I got to say, a lot of it came from a mistake. So I've been connecting a little bit with Auntie Pua Case, who's, for people who don't know her, just an extraordinary land defender and force for protecting Mauna Kea and Kumu Hula and on. She's tremendous, and her daughter is also this amazing, you know, activist and musician and all these things. And I reached out to her at a certain point, and I said, hey, listen, can I talk to you about a few things going on in season two? Because I want to make sure that I get them right. Because, you know, you talk about, like, trying to figure out where you belong in Hawaii, right? Like, I'm a Haole girl from Punahou. My parents are from the mainland. Like, you know, I don't belong in Hawaii. It's just that I was raised there, and the land became accidentally a third parent to me. And so I feel a responsibility to try and treat it with a certain amount of respect and tell some of those stories that I think are somewhat unrepresented. And so I'm talking to Auntie Pua, and she goes, wait, back up. So she plants the flag for the Hawaiian people on the island. I said, yeah, it's a Pacific island. She goes, wait, but it's next to California, right? And as soon as she said it, my stomach turned to water. And I was like, oh, my God.
I'm bad at geography, too.
So Hawaii is 2,000 miles away from the coast of California.
Right.
The geographically most isolated place in the world.
It just seems California-esque, you know?
And this place is, we said 13 nautical miles. And I was like, oh, my God. And she goes, it's okay. You can just change it. And I said, no, sure can't. It's out. Season one is out. And I was like, let me think about this. Let me figure out a way to make this right. And I went inside to my husband, and I was like, hey, I did that thing that white people do when they try and do the right thing and they fuck it up worse. And he was like, uh-huh. So what's the fix? And I was like, give me a minute. And I thought, well, maybe this is Lei's journey of you come at this with the best intentions, trying to do the right thing, and you fail.
This is the mistake you were referencing earlier.
This is the mistake. Yeah, yeah. And so
happens.
But you turned it into such a beautiful and honest and whole story.
That's beautiful.
Right.
And of course you're coming at it from a place of honesty and truth. And you never would have done anything to be intentionally offensive or, you know, dismissive.
Yeah, but that's something that actually I think as white folks, we got to stop letting ourselves off the hook for.
I know.
Accidentally make it worse. But this time, at least, it could become a story point.
And that, like, and that's, and like, good on you for that, Sarah, for like, for recognizing that mistake. And as opposed to being like, okay, I forgive myself and just kind of letting it go. Like, it's like you, I mean, the fact that it sort of still weighs on you, but that you made direct action to try to correct it.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And to correct it and to then pass an even broader message to the rest of the world through the work itself of what needs to be done when these mistakes are made.
Ooh, I got chills. That was... Mm-hmm.
I know. No, it's beautiful. That. As a relatively, I wouldn't count myself entirely oblivious, but, you know, white dude, it was the White Lotus season that really, truly kind of hipped me to a lot of the stuff you guys are talking about. But I heard after the fact that it was kind of like eye rolled a little bit by native Hawaiians or people that are from there. Did y'all have any perspective on how that satirical show handled the perspective of the way that island has been co-opted? Do you think they got it right? Do you think it was a little on the nose? We don't have to use this. I'm just curious.
No, it's okay. I don't know. Kelly, you wanna hit that?
I've got opinions. Yeah, I saw first season.
I'm curious.
I mean, there were not really Hawaiian characters, right? I mean,
just that one Kai.
Yeah, just that one. But you know, I guess that's just another example of Hollywood coming in using this beautiful scenery to make this story and not really getting deep. But I mean, I get it. It's not about Hawaii. It's about the tourists that come, right? That show. Mm-hmm. It's really, you know, Hawaii's just the backdrop.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
There is a line in episode 1 that truly resonates, I think, with just about anybody that might hear it. The idea that being human is a revolutionary act these days. And Sarah, I believe we talked about this either in a conversation outside of the podcast or in the bonus episode we did for season 1. But I would love to hear all of you kind of react to that, because that does seem to be kind of the thesis or like a big mission statement. The idea of truly being human being in and of itself a revolutionary act.
Well, I guess I can start with that one, like that, and which this thought had come to me with a previous question, but in that idea is why, Sarah, I was so adamant to you during like the breaking of story of like, no, you gotta just do it, because that's true. Like being human is a revolutionary act, and it shouldn't be that we have that Hollywood is, it has become too too Barbie-like and has neglected its responsibility to, as an art form, to reflect the world back at itself and to make sure we're keeping tabs on what we're doing and where we're going. And so for you to not be afraid and to just go ahead and say some shit that nobody else is willing to say is necessary for the human evolution, for us to grow and for us to realize that we're never going to get anywhere as a species, as a culture, as a society, if we choose to be safe and be quiet. We will, all the issues and problems that we have will always be touched on or always be sort of acknowledged, but not made actionable, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I just always feel like it's our duty as humans to, in everything that we do, to move us forward so that, like, I always think about, like, I want my kids to be able to play outside. I want my kids to be able to see a world that is better than the world that I had, and not by the means of materialism, but by the means of what they're able to experience and what they're able to think and what they're able to do. I'm just really happy, Sarah, that you decided to be like, fuck it. let's go.
And at the end of the day, this is a post-apocalyptic show, which inherently has a certain amount of nihilism to it, where it's like the world is unsavable. But through the characters and the actions of the characters, there is a certain amount of hope to it. And I think you can, through a post-apocalyptic show, express that sentiment of how the world is worth saving, you know, through that situation where everyone's kind of in the most dire circumstances they might ever find themselves in. Sarah, can you kind of speak to that? You know, I mean, the idea of how, with everything going on in the news and the world, how do we find a way forward in a way to not just get overwhelmed by sadness and all of the bad things and, you know, all of the next bad things that could come?
It's such a good question. And I mean, I think in some ways writing this is me fumbling for an answer. I do believe that being human and being humane feels like a revolutionary act right now. And I think that maybe one of the greatest deficits that we face as a culture is a dearth of civility. You know, like, I remember the moment when people stopped talking to each other based on their politics. It wasn't like that when I was growing up, but it was during the second Bush presidency when, you know, people started feeling like they're coming for me or they're whatever. And like, I don't know. It's really hard. It's really hard. And I don't have an answer, but I do think that our ability to sit with difference and sit with disagreement and to be able to say, I think differently from you, that doesn't mean I'm going to ostracize you. That's really hard for me sometimes to do, but I think that's a part of it. And I think what's interesting about post-apocalyptic stories is it does often make strange bedfellows.
Well, you know, because everyone's in the worst possible situation they could be, and it reveals their true self. And then you either have the opportunity to become the villain or you have the opportunity to be a great connector and truly see what the essence of being human is.
And that's so much of what Auntie's character was about.
Yeah. I think that we saw a little bit of this in 2020 when COVID happened, right? There was still a lot of politics involved, still a great divide, but you saw what people were really made out of, right? There were those who just locked themselves up and tried to save as much toilet paper as they could and, you know, like really hoarded and stuff. And then there were those who were like running for the front line. How can I help? Where are the food banks? How can I help pass out food to people who cannot leave their homes? You know, that's where you saw like people's real character and what they were made out of, you know, what they were about. And so I feel like that was sort of our mini, you know, post-apocalyptic moment, right? Where you saw who was banding together, who was willing to work together, and who was just like, I'm saving myself. And I think that, you know, this podcast really kind of shows a lot of those personalities, right? Mm-hmm. Those, who was it that like is trying to take over or save themselves, and who, you know, reached out as a community and said, how can we help? How can we, mm-hmm. what can we do to save each other?
And Hawaii is really good at that. Like, oh. I remember in the aftermath of Maui, there was somebody who, the Lahaina fire, somebody posted something and they were like, so the Red Cross just got here and they realized we already did it.
Yeah.
They were like, we set up the, like, I think she called it like local Costco. She's like, yep. On every street corner, there's people passing out all kind of things that people need because this is who we are. And so like basing, you know, like Auntie was all about that because it was like, I knew these women. I grew up with these women that you're like, I think I need it's already in front of you in 6 different flavors.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, amazing. Thank you. And there's that sense of like this community problem solving, this community, this sense of like Ohana as very vast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny talking about all this stuff and like COVID and being such a teachable moment. Sarah, you, I think it was in the last time we did one of these, talked about like the movie moment when you found out about COVID. You were like at an airport or something, and it was like that scene where everyone's like, oh no, everything's on the news now. Everything's all fucked up. We got to figure out how to do it. That was the moment I think you decided to do this, or it was something around that, but it was a very, I don't know, it was a very intense scene that you described, and you did such a good job of describing it. I'd love if you could quickly just tell us what that was again and how you feel now, having gotten through that and still making a, you know, this show.
Well, so the sort of weird thing is, so that movie moment actually happened in the middle.
Mm.
So I finished writing season 1 in December of 2019, and we recorded in the studio in LA. It was like me and Dave and Joy. We did the first 3 or 4 episodes of our stuff. And then COVID hit. And then I went to New York and we did a day in New York in February of 2019 with Jeffrey and EJ. And so we had about the first 4 episodes in. And then COVID locked everybody down. And the moment that was kind of crazy is I had been in LA. I was doing press for a show I was on with Jeffrey Dean Morgan's wife, actually. And I was like, I don't like the way this is going. Get me out of here. And they were like, you're being ridiculous. I was like, no, I really want to be on the next plane. So I get on the plane. And as the plane lands, the captain comes over the whatever the you know,
loudspeaker
PA system. That's not what they call it. Thank you. Loudspeaker. And says, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Canada. I hope this is home for you because Prime Minister Justin Trudeau just announced that the border will close tomorrow.
You're never going to leave again.
I had this moment of like, I was like, they just closed the border between Canada and the United States. Like, this is one of the friendliest borders. So that was a terrifying moment. And that's where we started getting in our closets and recording from there. But it was a sort of strange thing because we'd written this show about a pandemic and then we had a pandemic.
That's what it was, yeah.
And somebody, one of the cast members in season 1 was like, hey, how about you write season 2 about me winning the lottery?
Oh, like you're the Nostradamus of podcasting.
Exactly, like if this is how it happens. Yeah. So thankfully, I don't think there were any crises like what happened in season 2, although it was interesting that we sort of centered the back half of season 2 on Hawaii and land claims. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Maui did become, land in Maui became a pretty central issue in the world, but I don't think that's our fault.
But through that tragedy, right, though, a lot of people learned, right, about water rights, mm-hmm, and Maui,
oh,
and you know,
point,
what corporations do to Native Hawaiians and other Native peoples.
Yeah.
You know, I think that was important, you know, that people learned why this tragedy happened in, mm-hmm, Lahaina, and you know how corporations played a role in, you know, the lack of water.
Well, mm-hmm. even in general, just in terms of like the kinds of lessons you can learn from post-apocalyptic fiction, I just visited the Hoover Dam. I was in Vegas for the first time and I went with some friends to the Hoover Dam. And the film that obviously hasn't changed since the 60s that they play before you do the tour, it's very propagandistic. It's like it's a triumph of the human spirit. We did this with a gazillion tons of concrete. But what you realize is it's all about harnessing natural resources and who gets them. And I'm fascinated by that in general. And, you know, one thing, if you've played the Fallout video game series, there's an installment in it called Fallout New Vegas, where the Hoover Dam is an important rallying point in a post-apocalyptic scenario, because it will continue generating electricity from those rushing waters of the Colorado River indefinitely. And that's where you want to be, because that's where the power is. That's where the clean water is. And it really makes you realize how we're all kind of on the razor's edge of being frozen out by the corporations in terms of the natural resources in the entire world, you know?
Well, you know, I mean, vis-a-vis that, like the whole source of the virus thing, that came from an article in the LA Times. So like the millions of barrels that were dumped of DDT that were illegally dumped off the coast of California, like that's, you know, I remember somewhere in the middle of season one, I was like, I'm going to have to come up with where this virus came from at some point. Like, I'm not going to be able to punt this forever. This isn't lost. I need an answer. And because knowing that,
still
like,
still mad about that.
Same. Well, for what it's worth, I actually never got to the end of Lost.
It's not good. Don't worry about it.
Don't
worry about
it. It hurt. I love me some Josh Holloway. I just
so
don't.
So good
anyway,
when
don't.
It was good, and then it just
it ugh, hurt. It's still a betrayal.
Well, and that's the thing is like I have never seen all of Lost, but Lost fans are still mad. They're still mad, like a divorce that happened 15 years ago and you lost the house. And clearly for really good reason. And I was like, I don't want that to happen to me. I realize we only have like 6 fans, but I don't want them to be like,
come now.
You had no plan. You terrible person, you had no plan. And so I read this article and I was like, ooh,
perfect.
That feels like the kind of thing that can create some awful, toxic thing. And so I actually put a link in my bio this last week to the LA Times article. And I was like, by the way, there's still millions of barrels of DDT corroding off the coast of California. You know, well, maybe Dow Chemical or whoever it is that's responsible for that ought to, like, I don't know, clean them up.
Yeah.
For
get
sure.
Get them out there before a pandemic wipes everybody out and sends us all to a refugee camp in Catalina.
No.
Just
But like for things like, I mean, I feel like Aftershock is a very, I don't know, specific thing to this, but like for things, I want to stop saying post-apocalyptic and say instead, I guess, like post-critical or post-crisis, because like, I don't know, like when it comes to like TV and entertainment, like I was saying before, like I just feel like more are people watching. I was actually just talking to a friend about this the other day because she's like a huge like activist. She does a lot. She's an activist. She's a connector and whatever. She gets so angry by watching certain shows, and people just watch it for entertainment. And same thing with like people just listen to it for entertainment and don't necessarily take as much of the message away or take as much of like the impact that it can have away. And I feel like when we say post-apocalyptic, it makes it sound so far and like, well, as if we're not realizing that
sci-fi.
We're halfway in a bit of, yeah,
we're
like
in
exactly. We are in an apocalypse, but it makes it sound so far-fetched as opposed to like post-crisis is like, yeah, like the pandemic happened, like Maui happened. Mm. Like these things are happening and we need to do better.
Katrina.
Like,
I mean,
exactly.
Come on, you know?
Mm. Exactly. Mm. Like we need to pay closer attention to that aftermath and know that and learn from that to do even better the next time and for us to rally more together. So I just wanted to say that no more post-apocalyptic, like post-crisis. It's in the now.
I like that.
Well said.
Yeah.
I like that. It holds us more accountable.
Yeah. Yes.
It really does. Thank you for that.
Well, speaking of a refugee camp, this season takes place in a refugee camp in part, and it has themes of trauma and survivor's guilt, and the cast is obviously super well, all of you from your various projects, super well-versed in portraying end-of-the-world scenarios, but the tensions post-disaster is something that really resonates and feels very connected with our collective trauma through COVID, you know, through the things you're describing. These are all very real news stories. Is this something that you were drawing on, Sarah, or like how were you drawing on the news and this type of collective trauma, or how did you kind of couch all of that within the narrative of your fictional show?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're all trying to heal, right? You know, I mean, somebody said to me the other day, they were like, COVID is a BCAD event. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a before and there's an after, culturally and individually. And like Kelly, you pointed out, you know, we all reacted to it in very specific ways, and we all learned a lot about ourselves. And I think we're still kind of reckoning with that, and, you know, trying to rebuild ourselves in positive ways. But I think we have an opportunity to reimagine our culture, right? Like, we discovered that we could stop our culture on a dime, which was bananas.
Oh, wow.
And so if that's possible, then it means that we're actually much more agile than we have been led to believe and allowed ourselves to believe. And it means that things that seem impossibly entrenched, you know, colonialism comes to mind, like, we can actually reimagine those things pretty competently if we decide to.
Well said. Tati, your character, Michaela, and Sarah's character were very much at odds in the last season. How do you see the evolution of that relationship this season, and where do you think it might go from there?
Well, it definitely evolved, I think, from what your previous question just was, of one sort of, I mean, trauma bonding in a way, but as well as, like, Michaela having to mature, despite being, you know, a teenager, having to mature and understand the gravitas of the situation, the gravitas of what she's carrying, and the gratitude to Cassie for not only saving her life, but putting up with her, and realizing that that's not a, that, that all adults aren't, just supposed to do that. Like she put Cassie through a lot, and Cassie stuck by her. I think that even more so this season, like it forms into sort of a true familial, but slash sort of friendship. I was just the other day re-listening actually to the second to last episode, where Michaela goes or tries to kill herself. And I really love this scene that Cassie goes to her to get her blood sample, mm-hmm. and is not trying to sit there and talk her out of, in the conventional way, talk her out of killing herself. She's just like, hey, look, okay. Like, if this is what you decide to do, sure, go ahead and do it. Like, just, I'm going to remind you that it's not the answer, and that it's only going to cause worse things, but I'm going to leave you to it. Like, you got to decide. And I think that differently than a parental figure would have done, it's very real. It's very, it makes Michaela have to grow even more. And I think, that Michaela is starting to regard Cassie in this way of, she is more than just a caretaker, but a guide, a soundboard. And so I hope to see that continue to form. I think in both of them, I think that they give each other, it goes both ways. And even what Michaela makes Cassie consider,
for sure.
So I don't know. Nice. I look forward to just seeing that friendship sort of grow and blossom. And I'm curious to what it will turn into, especially if they do find Deandra, if they are forced to be separated. That's what I think I'm most curious to see.
Sarah, can you kind of speak to the flip side of that relationship?
I mean, you know, it started just trying to create the most complicated female relationship I could imagine.
Nice.
And one that wasn't based in boys, you know, I've been a stepdaughter, I've been an ex-stepdaughter, I've been a daughter-in-law, and I think those are really complicated relationships because mothers come in many different forms, and sometimes we are mothered by the people who step up, and sometimes we're mothered by people that we wouldn't have chosen. And certainly as a mom, I learn more than I teach, you know, like I'm absorbing a lot more.
Absolutely.
Cause I think there's a moment as a parent where you're like, oh my God, we all just make it up. Like,
you think there's going to be this aha moment where you're all of a sudden like perfectly formed to do the right thing.
Yeah.
And you just, it doesn't happen. We're all still 21 in our minds, essentially, you know, or younger even, and just working our way through it and figuring it out and learning as we go along.
Yeah. And so many of the, you know, and so many for, I think for a lot of us, so many of the best lessons that we learned from our parents were, okay, so there's the list of what I don't want to do. You know what I mean? And like fumbling in the dark for some other things. Well, I, you know, the relationship that I'm super curious about, that Tati just mentioned, is really like what happens when Deandra ends up in this mix. And, you know, Cassie doesn't belong there.
To the point of different types of motherhood, there's a listener question that came in for Tati. Why does Julian call Michaela Mammy? It sounds like she's calling her his mother.
Well, Mummy is like just within, if those who are familiar with like Latin culture, it's a term of endearment. He calls Michaela Mummy as a way of saying like
respect.
Yeah, respect, but also just in, it's almost in a way like saying, what's an equivalent again? Like, not baby,
is it like auntie like, in Hawaiian? Like everybody that is, you know, a little bit older but close to you is auntie.
But no, they're peers.
Yeah,
right. I think it's, mommy's more like homie, maybe, or yeah, something.
No,
like, that.
Like not even homie, because it's more that it's even because he. I don't think that Julian would have said that to like I don't know another friend of his that was. I mean, no, I guess he still would. It's just a term of endearment, a term of showing love.
It does seem to indicate that you think this person is wise, though, or there is like a upper like a level of intelligence and respect. That's just how it hits me.
For listeners, it is worth knowing that it's spelled M-A-M-I, not M-O-M-M-Y.
Right.
Which is the big difference. I saw a couple of comments where people were like, why is he calling her mommy? Like M-O-M-M-Y.
And I butchered the pronunciation. Oh,
No. I mean, in the show, people have been asking. And, you know, for what it's worth, it literally was just a nod to like when we were shooting Prison Break, Amaury Nolasco exclusively referred to me as mommy. Mm-hmm. He'd be like, mommy, come here. I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, there's not a corollary that I can express, but it was just sort of a way of saying like, hey, you mean something to me. We're friends.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it kind of like saying like, babe, like when you call your, like, sometimes
the
I call my friends,
babe. Has so many
like,
negative
hey,
connotations there. Like, it can be not great when you call somebody babe, especially.
It depends who you
but
are.
If you're saying
right.
it to
that's
your friends,
also true. Yeah.
You know,
no, that's right. That's
friends,
right. You're right. Yeah.
Then it's a term of endearment. It's a way to be like,
yeah, I have a group of friends in Hawaii. We call each other auntie.
Yeah.
And and if you were to call somebody else auntie, they might take it wrong because, you know, it's not their culture. But me and my girlfriends, you know, you're like, hey, auntie, what's up? Yeah. Well, how you doing?
Yeah.
It's very, it is a term of endearment and also respect because you respect your aunties, right? You respect your elders. So even though, you know, they are, you know, of, you know, they're the same age, they're peers, you know, there's still that sort of sense of respect and warmness and cultural, you know, like it's, I guess they don't have it in European culture where they just do that.
Not really.
I'm trying to think of an analog. I can't really think of one.
I mean, it's a little bit like, I think when you talk about the babe thing, if Janelle was to call me babe, like, hey, babe, I think it's, you know what I mean?
Or sis,
not coming from a dude.
Yeah.
Not which like, hey, babe.
A little bit different unless they're gay.
Yeah,
but like,
it's totally different.
Yeah. You know, there's so much nuance to this kind of thing.
That's right. And it's a nuance that I think you capture beautifully. And I think it's so important the way you all are clearly friends, whether you've had dinner with each other in person or not. There is an energy that is in this cast that feels like you're real people having real conversations and telling real stories. And I just want to applaud all of you for that. I think it really reads as a listener. It's a beautiful show. And you're taking, you know, a format that everyone knows and has been done to death in some ways, but you're doing it in a way that really speaks to a much more empathetic perspective and a much larger, you know, problem. You're using this again. I really do think the reason this has been done to death and varying degrees of quality is because science fiction oftentimes predicts what really happens in the world. You know, we've seen it time and time again. 1984 is real. It's out there. It's happening. It's bad. But it's a thing. And I think you're doing a great job in taking a trope that everyone maybe recognizes and twisting it in a way and making it more about family and teaching people about a culture that maybe they're not familiar with.
I feel like, though, this is sort of a callback to radio days. Right?
Yes.
When there was no television and people, families would gather around the radio and listen to actors, you know, play out stories. It's going back to that, you know, that sort of just sitting around listening, using your imagination and being taken on a journey. You know, I although podcasts feel like they're new in that way, it's really
cyclical,
isn't.
It's, you know,
It was done a long time ago, and I'm glad that it's coming back. I'm glad that it's made a resurgence. But
the word
still
that always
fresh.
Gets thrown around is intimate, because people in your ears. We're talking about fiction. We're talking about produced kind of like experiential things. But the true value of podcasts is usually I like this person. I like these characters. I want to spend time with them because they're in my ears and they're my friends. And I think that quality that is important in podcasts and doesn't always happen in fiction podcasts. Y'all have figured out how to kind of transcend that in fiction podcasts, and I think it's really lovely.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
To wrap it up, honestly, the world of Aftershock is super rich, as we've clearly described in this hour, especially given that it has to exist mostly in the listener's imagination. I'd love to hear a little bit from each of you about how acting for audio presents challenges and rewards and opportunities that are different than when you're acting for the camera.
Well, I remember in my first closet session in season one, you know, I think when you're an actor in general, you sort of have to like not take yourself too seriously. But here we were in a totally strange situation. I'm in my closet in a pandemic. I'm pretending I'm on a boat paddling with Sarah, who I never met in person. You know, she's in Canada and I'm in my little box on my laptop and my dogs are outside like, and I'm like, oh, please don't bark. And, you know, you're just like, I feel like a fool. And, you know, I'm like in my closet and I'm like, I'm like huffing and puffing. And it's the first time I've ever done any type of like voice acting. And you couldn't feel further from what your character is doing in this situation. And I remember Sarah just being like, I know it feels so silly, but like run, like just like run in place, be out of breath, like whatever puts you in that place. And I just very quickly had to just not feel like a total weirdo and just go there. And
it sounds like you're describing green screen. It's like green screen acting. How is it any different than like motion capture? It's way better. It's more punk. It's way more punk rock. It's so much more punk rock. I love it.
Soul around you, no energy whatsoever that you get on set, right? And I just very quickly had to be like, stop taking yourself so seriously. Stop feeling so silly and just go there. And the second I did, and I did what Sarah said, like just put yourself in that place, even just physically switch it up, make yourself feel like you're out of breath. Then I was like, oh, there's something that's so liberating in doing this kind of acting because you don't have the help that you have on set of, you know, the costume and the props and
the set, the space.
You're on a boat. So it's like, oh, this is easy. I can paddle. You have to create all of that for yourself. And
it takes so much imagination.
So much imagination.
Right?
Yeah. And for me, I just had to just be like, stop feeling silly and just go there. And the second I did, it was just so much fun. And that's part of the fun and is the challenge of it all. Creating it for yourself, whether you're in a closet or in a sound studio. It's just...
But as an actor, you really have to depend on the director to set the stage. Yes,
absolutely.
Right? Because otherwise, you don't know, like, if the person is right next to you, or if you're talking to them, you know, 20 feet away, or if, you know, you're in the middle of doing action, or all of these little details that... Yeah. You would normally not have to be, you know, it would not have to be explained to you because you'd be doing it. All of these little details have to be thought out and explained by the director, exactly what the situation is, you know, where you're at in the scene emotionally, but also physically. And that's the hardest part is just getting that right. And so you do end up having to do a lot of, you know, ADR. Not ADR because you're not like doing the visual part.
The whole thing's ADR, basically.
Yeah, the whole thing is ADR. But like you sometimes have to go back and re-record things because we're like, oh, we made a mistake. This is, you know, this part doesn't match because this is actually the situation. This is, you know, how far apart you guys actually are, you know, or... Actually, I don't know. Did I record it? I don't think I actually re-recorded anything, did I? Oh, no, I did. I think I did. But I'm getting so old. I can't remember anything anymore. But that's the fun of doing audio, just audio. Also, you don't have to worry about how you look or your makeup or your lighting or
just
not, you know,
there.
Like not being blocked by, you know, anything or, you know, yeah, you just, it's all in your imagination. You're in a super safe place and you can just close your eyes and go for it, you know, and all you have to concentrate on is this, the tone of your voice, the sound that you make. I love it.
On the other side of that, I always think of this hilarious video of Hugh Jackman doing looping for Wolverine, where he's like, no, 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 no. He's like on a mic and he's like pretending to run and stuff.
Yeah.
It's hilarious, but he's, you know, he's doing it to get in that headspace.
It's hard when you're doing it in the trunk of your car.
It's hard. Well, there's not enough room to pump your arms, you know, for dark. And Tati, we haven't heard from,
I'm sorry. I was doing a lot of voiceover stuff during the pandemic as well, and I just built this little like closet. And then every once in a while, you got to like open the curtains or open the door just to gasp for air, because otherwise it's not soundproof, right? You got to just remember to breathe.
Make me.
Tati, let's hear from you as the last word on how you act differently for screen versus audio.
I think to Kelly's point, like just the use of imagination, I think is my favorite part of doing audio, and it's almost like testing your I'm not good at describing these things, but testing your humanness in a way. Like it's like, cause to be able to be in a stationary like position, like, and like, whether it is you have to like row a canoe or like think about how somebody would feel if they, I don't know, killed a person, but you're standing in your closet or standing in a tiny room. It's like, you have to dig deep into the human aspects of yourself. And it's almost a form of meditation. I'm thinking about it, which is where you have to dig really deep into like your human aspects in a stagnant form and reach into parts of the soul that sometimes I feel like I wouldn't even be able to reach in on set, being that there's so many sort of different kinds of stimuli coming in. It's really grounding, I find audio work. I just find it really grounding, and it makes me have to, I feel like it teaches me things to then take to set later.
I was about to say, it seems like it would be a very teachable experience that you could then translate into on screen or into camera acting.
Yeah. Especially with just like emotionality and thinking about things in a different way. Cause I feel like on set, we often rely on the environment to influence us or to help us get there or to give us a shock into something else. But when you're, standing in a room just in front of a microphone, it's
also you get to play characters doing voiceover that you would never get cast as if you were to do it in front of a camera, you know? So there's a much wider range of types of people that you get to play. People or even like monsters or non-humans too. Yeah. I mean, it's so much more, it's so much fun, you know, to live in this world of pretend.
The other thing that I think can be kind of interesting on the performance side of things is, you know, I'm aware as a director when I'm on a set, if I've got an actor who's got a seriously emotional scene and we shoot it and then they got a reset and it's like, okay, makeup's got to fix the mascara and we got to go back, you know, we got to reset the whatever. And, you know, if it's 5 or 7 or 10 minutes, you just sit there and you're like, I know how hard it is to hold on to that kind of a performance. And then the camera turns around and you do it again. And, you know, there's something that's kind of cool about being able to go, we can do 3 of these back to back. We can, you know, take the time you need because there's not 40 people standing around. You don't have to do it in a bathing suit in Nova Scotia in January. You know what I mean?
And pretend that it's warm, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I think it's simultaneously much harder because, you know, as Janelle was saying, like, all the imaginative work is on you. You are the set designer. You are the costume designer. You are the special effects designer. But at the same time, there is a level of, hey, you know what? If you want to do this 100 times until we find the right place, you can do that. And when you get there, we've got it. You don't have to do it again while we turn around on somebody else because you're simultaneously capturing the performance of everybody in the scene who's recording that day, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, I lied. I have one more really stupid question.
That's okay. And, These are great questions, by the way, Noel. Thank you.
No, I had a lot of help. Kelly, in episode 8, you and David Morrissey's character Emerson go on a long, strange trip together. You mentioned it at the top of the episode. We heard that you were at Burning Man. How similar was that to the events that transpire?
I'm not going to lie. We were actually camping with a mushroom grower. And so, yeah. Yes. And we were trapped in the mud. We couldn't even, like, go from camp to camp. So, it was thoroughly entertaining.
I love it.
And does your performance constitute probable cause for the search of your vehicle the next time? I got to say, you guys crushed that. Crushed that scene. And I don't think, you didn't even record it together, right? I don't think you did. I think that was one of those scenes where we matched people up afterwards. But you guys absolutely crushed that. We finished that recording and I was like, Kelly has walked people through bad trips.
It's apparently a job at festivals like that. There's like a person that's like a trip babysitter kind of.
That's what they do.
I need to get business cards.
This is definitely not for the episode. This is just for us. But our CEO, Bob Pittman, goes to Burning Man. Ooh. And he got out of there on his private jet 2 days before everything went to shit.
Wait, Kelly needed a ride.
He did bougie.
There's no room for you on Bob Pittman's private jet, Kelly. I'm sorry.
I would not have wanted to leave. It was the best part of Burning Man.
It sounds
like
a terrifying place. I don't want to be there.
It was so fun. People were mud wrestling. People were making giant penises out of the mud. I mean, it was burners are the best people.
It's like Woodstock 94.
Absolutely resilient and creative. And you know, like, people were like, you know, nobody was really worried about running out of food and water, because you bring all that in, right?
Of course not.
There's so much to share. People were a little bit worried about running out of drugs, but but not the essential, like, food and water and stuff like that. Like, we
made the essential drugs.
Like,
we brought enough of those.
People were walking around with, like, garbage bags on their feet, you know, like, you know, just like.
Isn't it interesting, though, how a thing like that's been co-opted, maybe not co-opted, by, like, these, like, super one percenters, and then there's this divide. There's this weird divide between the people that are about it and there to, like, do the damn thing.
Yeah, the there's definitely a prejudice, you know, of like old school OG burners and, like, the bougie burners.
Oh, wow.
You know, there's
the bougie burners.
The bougie burners. Yeah.
By the way, that's our next podcast.
Okay.
100%. Well, no, that's just called Firefest 2.0.
Can we still make shirts? You remember the shirts we were supposed to make? The body bearing, so, like, Michaela's body bearing.
Michaela's corpse removal.
Yeah.
Ben, remind me to talk about that, because actually I'm talking to a buddy right now about, who's an amazing, amazing graphic design. He's about to publish the first gay Superman for Marvel. It's Sina Grace. So I've known him forever. He's going to do a design for us for merch. I completely forgot about Michaela's body removal. I got to text him about that.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
All
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Let's hit it. Give me a vacation.
Vacation!
Give me a wave.
Surfing!
Give me a city tour.
The trolley!
Give me animals.
The zoo!
Give me some sea life. Give me museums.
Balboa Park!
Give me a woo!
Roller coaster!
What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your family vacation at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.